But if you close your eyes, does it almost feel like nothing changed at all?
Chapter 6. The flood pours through a narrow opening that's just barely wide enough to fit them, rapidly closing, and they spill out onto a wide stone floor that's already covered in a few inches of warm water. John comes up coughing, dripping wet yet again, even if he's slightly warmer this time, and immediately hauls Fives up onto his knees. Echo, on his other side, is choking and coughing, and John reaches for him, curls his hand over his back, but can't do anything to help. "All right?" he asks hoarsely. "Ugh," Five says expressively, but he pulls away from John to kneel on Echo's other side, offering him a hand. Echo takes it, clasping their wrists, and lets Fives haul him to his feet. "Did we just get hit by a waterfall?" Echo asks incredulously. Grimly, John glances back at what used to be a staircase, but the door they fell through has slid almost completely shut, only a narrow gap left to let in a steady stream of water. The room is wide, empty, but the water on the floor is already ankle deep and rising. "It's not from the river," he says. "The trap must have diverted water from whatever source feeds the spring."
"And that's the only door," Echo says quietly, staring at the gap.
He turns, scanning the edges of the room, and asks, "So how do you think this one works?"
"Frustratingly,"
is Fives' verdict. He splashes across to the entrance, bending down to check it, and then asks,
"John, can you cut through this?"
John joins him, crouching down to check as well, and pauses. Beyond the stone, all he can feel is pressure, and when he tries to press the door back upwards, there's a groaning creak and the water starts rushing faster through the widened gap.
"Criff," Fives mutters, eyeing it. "I guess that's a no."
"The whole stairwell must be filled with water," John says quietly. "We might be able to swim up, but..." Echo makes a resigned sound. "But we need to go down," he finishes, and John nods. "There must be another door," he says. "This isn't just a trap. It's part of the temple. They would have given themselves a way out." Fives gives him a faintly wry smile.
"I'll take the left wall," he says, and wades in that direction.
The water is already halfway up his shins, and John tries not to calculate exactly how long they have left before it's past their shoulders.
"I'll take the far wall then," Echo says after a moment, and gives John a look he can't read before he turns away.
It makes John's skin itch just a little, and he grimaces at himself, drags his fingers through the stringy, wet strands of his hair, and shoves them back, then turns to the right wall, heading for it with careful steps. This was definitely once a temple room of some sort. John recognizes the design of it, wide and open and full of light filtering down from above, with low, wide pools around the edges that were likely once filled with water flowers. There's a statue of the Sephi Master in the center of the far wall, her hood drawn up and her hands raised, a lightsaber hilt resting in one palm, and a kyber crystal in the other. Before her, visible through the clear water, are blue tiles that practically glow against the surrounding white stones, catching the filtered light. John pauses before the statue for a long moment, staring into her hidden face. Then, careful, he bows to her, straightens. He's here to take from her vault, after all, even if he thinks that she would approve of the reason. "Forgive the intrusion, Master Sarah," he murmurs, "and she joined the Force long ago, but
That hardly means she can't hear him. The green crystal in her hand flickers, and John takes a breath, turns away. He skirts the statue to touch the wall, searching for a hidden crack or gap that might show a door. The blue tiles that ring Sarah's statue spread out, tracing the edge of the room to the first set of rectangular pools, and John crouches down in the knee-deep water, feeling out the edges, pauses, then grimaces and ducks under the water to reach down into the pool, trying to feel if they have a bottom. He can't feel one, but there's certainly water flowing up through them, strongly enough to keep him from diving down to the bottom to check for any kind of passage. When he surfaces again a moment later, the water is higher than it was. Their time to find the entrance is rapidly getting shorter, and John wonders a little grimly if there's an exit at all. There was a way through the arrows, though. Even the pit trap at the beginning was carefully constructed so that a Jedi could still get through. There has to be an exit here as well. These are defenses, not just traps. He wants to sit down and meditate, wants to reach out, submerging himself in the Force, and see if there's any clue there left for a Jedi seeking entrance. But the water is still rising. Echo and Fives are in heavy plastoid armor, and they won't be able to swim nearly as well as John in his lighter robes. Getting them out needs to be his focus. "Nothing over here," Echo says, grim. And John shakes his hair out of his eyes and glances up to see Echo splashing back across the room towards Fives. "If there's even a gap in the stone, I can't find it." Not surprising. Jedi built this temple from the ground up, carved it out of the mountain. They were skilled enough craftsmen to make every join perfect. And in this room particularly, John would expect them to make sure there was no way water could leak out. It's almost to his knees at this point, and John isn't a short man. He forces himself to breathe out, slow, calming, and casts a glance around the room. "Is this one of the founders of the temple?" Fives asks suddenly, and John glances over, finds him standing in front of the other statue and staring up at her. Like Master Sarah's statue, this one also stands with hands raised, a lightsaber hilt in one hand and a kyber crystal in the other. After a moment's pause, John wades across the hall, minding his footing on the slippery tiles, to pause in front of the statue. Unlike the other one, the human master has her hood down, leaving her face clear, and she's smiling, standing tall and straight with her gaze fixed across the hall. Deliberately, John curls his hands together and bows to her. "Master Elbry," he says quietly. "Yes." "Fives?" Echo asks, almost wary. He's watching Fives with narrowed eyes, faintly suspicious, and Fives gives him a quick smirk. "She's holding a lightsaber," he says. "I thought she was the one who specialized in crystals." "She is," John says, a little confused by why this sticks out to him. "But crystals are part of making lightsabers, which is what they both did." Echo makes a noise of agreement. "The other one's holding a crystal," he points out. "Exactly," Fives says, and rounds on John. There's an intense sort of focus on his face that almost makes John take a step back. He grabs John's arm, pulls him a step to the side, and then doesn't let go as he points upward. "Look, the way she's holding the lightsaber is the exact same way she's holding the stone, and the other one's hands are different. It looks like she should be holding two lightsabers." John looks, and he's right. Sarah's hands seem like they're meant to grip, while Elbry's hands are both open, almost flat. The statue's eyes are locked, too, looking at each other rather than looking down benevolently the way the versions at the entrance to the temple were. "I think you're right," he says, a little startled, and Fives grins. "No need to sound so surprised," he says, though there's no heat in it. "I've got more going for me than my pretty face." "Which is good, because there are a few million versions of it running around," Echo says dryly. He studies the statue for a moment, then grimaces and asks, "So we just grab it from her? Pry it out of her hand?" John winces. It feels rude, almost unspeakably rude. These were the leaders of the temple, some of the greatest smiths in the history of the Jedi Order. They've joined the Force, have long since passed on, but at the same time, this was their home. Even if it's doing its level best to kill them right now, John's skin crawls a little at the thought of deliberately breaking anything. Fives squints up at Elbry's hand, a good meter above his head, and pauses. "I don't think we'll have to," he says. "If it's meant to open a door, it shouldn't be too hard to move, right? They wouldn't want to trap their own people here. Just the Sith." He takes a step back, then says, "John, lift me up there. If it's easy to move it, it should just be something I can pick up." "Please is a good word, you know," Echo mutters. "As if you've ever said please in your life," Fives retorts. And John snorts quietly, letting himself settle. Fives is right. If it's the trigger, it won't be something they have to break to use. "Of course," he says, and raises a hand. It only takes a moment to lift Fives until he's level with the statue's hand, and he leans forward, almost flips head over heels before John manages to steady him quickly, reaches out for the lightsaber, resting in the palm of the statue's open hand, and nudges it cautiously. It shifts, and John can feel the flare of victory from Fives. "Ha!" he says, and leans in a little more. "It's just sitting on her hand. Picking it up should be fine." It feels easy. Easy enough that John is a little suspicious. The arrow hallway was dangerous, and the trapped hallway before it was the same. The water is halfway up his thighs now, but it still seems... "This is too easy," Echo says grimly, just as Fives picks up the lightsaber hilt. There's a ringing, echoing thud, and the door they fell through slides up. The staircase beyond it is one vast wave of water, and it pours into the room with the force of a waterfall. John staggers from the force of it, and Echo shouts, stumbling in the sudden current. He almost goes down, but John grabs for him as well, lifts him up above the rapidly rising water. "The crystal!" Fives says, waving the hilt at him. "We have to switch them!" The water hits his waist, still climbing, and John grimaces. "Hang on," he says, and turns, practically throwing both Echo and Fives across the room in the most controlled push he can manage. Like they're in free fall, Echo immediately twists, streamlining himself, arrowing straight for Sarah's statue. He hits it ahead of Fives, ducking in to grab the green crystal from Sarah's palm, and John breathes out, focuses, and calls him back, even as he holds Fives steady. "Put them in at the same time?" Echo asks, and he catches himself with a hand on Elbry's statue, then raises the crystal. The blue one she's holding already seems to shine brighter with its presence. "Seems dramatic enough," Fives jokes, though there's something tight in his voice. "John?" "On three," John says, and fear right now will be counterproductive. He doesn't acknowledge it, even as the water reaches his chest. If this doesn't work, if there's no way out and they've triggered the trap. "Three," Fives says, and sets the lightsaber in Sarah's grip, just as Echo drops the kyber crystal onto Elbry's open palm. In the same moment, the water sweeps over John's head and he chokes, shuts his mouth, holds his breath, and braces, trying to keep Echo and Fives steady even as his feet lose their grip. And then there's a shiver through the air, a feeling in the force that rises. Even through the water, John can see the kyber crystals start to shine, and he surfaces with a gasp, not quite able to tread water, about to slip under again. The lightsaber Sarah is holding ignite with a hiss, one blue blade and the other green. Fives yelps, and John immediately wrenches him back, goes under as he does, and has to fight his way up for air again. The two lightsabers aren't pointing at Fives, though. They're pointing towards the floor, and the blades cut right through the blue tiles around her statue. Something clicks and something pulls, and instantly the water level starts dropping again. John's feet hit the tiles, and he hulls himself straight, coughing out inhaled water as the pools along the walls start drawing water instead of pouring it out. The flood from the doorway doesn't abate, but the water level sinks faster than it can fill the room, and in a handful of moments, it's around John's knees. As carefully as he can, he sets Echo and Fives on their feet, then shakes his hair out of his face and coughs again. The water is warm, but the air down here is cold, and he can already feel the chill settling in. A moment later, there's a splash beside him, and then a body against his, pressed up against his side. Fives wraps an arm around his waist, even though John doesn't need the support. But when John glances up to tell him that, Fives grins at him, bright and pleased. "It worked," he says. John can't help it. He chuckles, giving Fives a smile in return, and nods to Echo as he splashes closer. "That was clever," he says. "I wouldn't have thought to look at the statues." "There's a door now, too," Echo says, pleased and relieved. And he hooks a hand behind Fives' head and pulls him in. Fives laughs and goes with it. He kisses Echo hard, and something jerks quick and hot in John's chest, so sudden that he has to yank his eyes away. A guilty sort of want curls low in his belly, and he curses himself, then deliberately slips out of Fives' grip and steps away, scanning the far wall. There is a door. And it's a far better thing to focus on than the way Fives moans, low and soft and unselfconscious. Instead of letting himself dwell, instead of letting himself want, he turns to Elbri's statue and bows to it formally, then to Sarah's, in thanks for the rescue. Steps away, minding the wet tiles, and approaches the door carefully. There are steps behind him. A low murmur that he can't quite catch, and John has to swallow, has to force himself not to look back and see what Echo and Fives look like when they've just been kissed. It's wrong to want them. It's wrong to want to receive the same when they've been so kind to him, as if they should be obligated just because they love each other. His stomach turns, but at least the rising guilt helps drown out the desire. There's another set of stairs leading down, but it's a shorter staircase this time, straight and simple, and there's a faint glow at the bottom, warm and golden red. John doesn't quite trust them or the lack of threat he can feel from them, but one trap right after the other and then a third in quick succession surely means they're due at least a little breathing room at this point. "Light?" Echo says quietly. "Too close." And his hand brushes John's hip as he leans past him to peer down the stairwell. Is someone still down there? He sounds unsettled by the thought, and John shakes his head, raising a hand, breathes in, out again, and says, "I can't sense any life forms near us. It should be safe." "It's been hundreds of years," Fives says, amused, and pushes right in between Echo and John, catching himself on John's shoulder when Echo shoves back. "How would anyone still be alive down here, Echo?" John hums, doesn't let himself look at either of them as he starts forward, taking the stairs with wary steps. "There are still Jedi in the Order who are over 500 years old," he says. "Master Tra-Sa is almost 800. And Grandmaster Yoda is 900. There's a startled pause, and then Fives squawks. "What? 900? Echo repeats, incredulous. "But he fought Dooku. He kicked Dooku's ass." There's a soft snort. John scrapes his hair out of his face, peering ahead of them through the low arch. "The Jedi Order frowns on speciesism," he points out. Fives scoffs. "There's speciesism, and then there's staying a Jedi for 900 years, he says. Didn't he get bored? Didn't he ever want to leave? John thinks of Faye and has to smile just a little. We're Jedi, he says. The Order is home. He wasn't given to the temple as a child. He never knew the creche the way other Padawans did. Dark Woman found him in her wanderings and raised him personally, apart from the temple. But even so, John's never been anything but a Jedi, has never wanted to be anything different. And from what he knows of Faye, it's the same for her. 500 years, and it simply made her steadier, more devoted to the Force. And in the end, that's what matters most as Jedi. The Force and the tenets of the Order, the will to keep people safe and preserve whatever peace they can. It's the thread that makes the Order a home, even for Jedi like John and Faye and Nico and Noel, who never return to Coruscant. A common purpose, a shared belief, and for all that there are 1,000 petty differences, the commonality is the most important part. I guess, Five says slowly, that I was thinking about it like the Gar or something. John shakes his head, glancing around as he passes the narrow archway. The room that opens out around them is smaller than the room above. Darker. There's no sunlight down here, but there's still light. A forge stands on one side of the room, dark and still, but yellow and orange kyber crystals set into sconces on the wall cast their brilliance over the space, and the floor practically radiates warmth. Oh, Echo says, startled. It's that Master's workshop. Master Serah was a Sephi, long-lived enough that it was likely hers, John thinks, steps forward, taking in the neat work tables, the low bed in the corner. Everything is remarkably preserved, right down to the robes hung on the walls, and he wonders if there was some sort of stasis field over the place, something that their entrance into the room above disturbed. I wonder if there were other ways out of the water room, he says quietly, and brushes his fingers over a set of tools, bright and unrusted despite the years they must have sat out. But because we moved the lightsaber and crystal, we got this door. It would make sense, Five says with a shrug. Who'd think to poke at the statue, right? And who would poke at the other one, too, once everything started flooding faster? A very clever trooper, John answers, amused, and Fives grins at him. Looking amused, Echo rolls his eyes. It's warm in here, he says. I bet wherever all the hot water came from, it's warmed by the same thing. We should let our clothes dry here before we move on. John inclines his head, stripping off his cloak and emptying his pockets. Will your armor dry? He asks, concerned, and pulls off his sash and then tosses his tunics next to the cloak. The undershirt follows because it's so thoroughly soaked it might as well be transparent anyway. And he strips off his boots, then his breeches, and lays them out as best as he can. There's a strange pause, and when he glances up, both Echo and Fives are watching him. Yeah, Fives says after a moment. The thermals are good for that, and the plastoid doesn't pick up a lot of water except in the padding. In this temp, it should dry within an hour or two. Ration break, Echo says, faintly relieved. We have extra, John. You should eat too. Thank you, John says and glances around the room. Takes a step, careful, and then pauses. Looks at the robes on the far wall and thinks of Master Serah down here. Building lightsabers in the warm glow. How long did she continue? How long did she last after they hid the temple and erased all record of it? Was she the last, or were there more after her, who sealed up her workshop, settled matters, and kept working right up until the end? Is this Jedi Master the one who built the lightsaber you're looking for? Fives asks, moving past John. He tests the bed, then settles down on it, stripped to his underwear and apparently unconcerned about it. John's face feels hot, and he deliberately looks away from so much dark skin, scattered with scrapes and bruises, but still appealing. Yes, he says, and hopes his voice sounds steadier than it feels. The crystal she used is difficult to work with and rare. Master Elbri found and refined it, and Master Sirah constructed a hilt for it. It was one of this temple's treasures.
At least the Sith never got it, Fives says, and waves a hand.
Come on, it's warm, but it's not that warm. Get down here.
We're coming, don't be impatient, Echo huffs, equally stripped down to skin, and he takes John's elbow as he passes.
Any blankets?
Why are you asking me? Fives protests,
shifting over before he bends to search under the bed. It's a clear invitation, but John tries to plant his feet, tries to pull away even so. It doesn't work. Echo simply turns, wraps an arm around his waist, and pulls him down between them, sandwiched on the narrow bed with his back to the wall and a body on either side. John freezes, not entirely sure what to do, how to react. But before he can, Fives makes a sound of success and hauls a thick blanket out from under the cot. There isn't even dust on it, and he shakes it open and tosses it over them, settling back against John's side. The press of that much skin makes John close his eyes, and he has to breathe steadily for a moment as Echo's hand curls over his thigh. They're so close, there's no other option. That's obvious. And he tries not to twitch as Fives' hand mirrors Echo's, sliding up his skin to pause at the rough line of a scar. You said you were going after the Separatist leader, Echo says quietly, like he hardly notices the way he and John didn't even have so much as a hair's breadth of space between them. Don't you want to have at least a couple of troopers for something like that? Or even another Jedi? John hesitates, wondering how to answer. He could say, again, that he's not command material. Could tell them that he's on the edge of dark in a way most Jedi aren't. And unlike Mace Windu, he doesn't dare channel it. Doesn't dare do more than acknowledge it and keep moving, wary of its influence. But he already said that, and they didn't understand.
I'm undercover, he says, which is true enough. Not at the orders of a council member, but undercover all the same. Most of the order thinks I died. It's best to keep it that way. And if they assigned someone to me, it would raise questions.
There's a pause, careful, and Echo and Fives trade glances.
Died? Fives repeats. You're that far undercover, but that means you can't go back to Coruscant or get help from other Jedi, even if you're in trouble.
There are others, John says, uncomfortable.
He knew what he was getting into, agreeing with the plan that Noel and Nico and Faye brought him. With the abilities Dark Woman passed on, he could get them off Quetta without Kenobi realizing, fake his own death, and then help the others fake theirs. Faye finding Maul wasn't expected, but it made the whole charade incredibly valuable. They can move undetected now, can operate without anyone knowing, and even the Sith Lord won't be expecting them to reappear when they do. He was never in contact with other Jedi, much as it was. It doesn't matter.
How long since you've seen them? Echo asks, frowning.
When John hesitates, he raises a pointed brow.
That long? But what about contact? What about having someone to rely on?
John snorts, soft.
I've been working in the Outer Rim since I became a knight, he says. Very, very few Jedi ever visit the Rim. That part I'm used to.
St-
still, Five says, insistent. If Echo or I were on our own, it would hurt. Maybe Jedi aren't like the clones, but you're still used to growing up right alongside other younglings in the creche, right?
I wasn't raised in the creche, John says, and looks away, up at the darkened forge. My master found me on a planet in the rim when I was an infant, and she brought me up to be her Padawan.
Oh, Echo frowns, trading a glance with Fives again. I didn't think Jedi did that.
Most Jedi wouldn't, John allows, careful of his words. My master is unorthodox. She wanted a Padawan who was strong enough to learn the skills she unearthed, and I had potential.
And those skills are why you get this mission? Fives asks.
When John glances over, Fives is watching him carefully, and his fingers are just a little tighter on John's leg.
All those lost abilities you said she found, she taught you, and now you're going to use them against the Seps.
Against those who are controlling this war, John says deliberate. Most of the lower-level separatists don't want to enslave planets or kill millions. They just want the Senate to hear them. But those above them just want power or profit.
There's a pause. Careful. And then Echo says,
you're looking for the Sith who infiltrated the Senate. John goes still, breath tangling in his throat. Five snorts, shifting so that he can look at John's face.
Dooku told General Kenobi and General Skywalker, he says,
when Hondo Onaka kidnapped them. We read the report, but nothing ever came out of it. No one investigated, not really.
Except you're investigating, Echo finishes, and there's a light in his face, something as intent as a big feline watching its prey wander close, entirely unaware.
You're investigating and you found out who it is, because that's who you're planning to use this lightsaber on.
For a long moment, there's nothing John can say or do. He looks from Fives to Echo, at a loss for words, and it wasn't supposed to be something they could parse out so easily. No one else has managed. But a handful of words, and now they know.
You can't say anything, he says, rough. Even when you make it back, don't even think about it too often. The Sith has a long reach, and he won't hesitate to kill anyone who he thinks might know.
We won't, Echo says, like that should be a relief. But his voice is grim. It's our secret now, too.